And particularly when it's 2 months after you've just told the previous person.
We're just coming up to the time where we're going to take a natural break for everybody for 5 minutes. Just before we do that, I'm going to remind people of the event that we are running on the 10th of January. Sorry, no, 10th of July. Let me say that again. 10th of July. Our normal conference is in January. I apologize. Artificial intelligence and financial advice. We've got some great organizations coming to show new tech. I've particularly secured some really interesting, I know there are a lot of people doing little AI events at the moment. A lot of you will know I spend a lot of time looking at these things globally. I've managed to secure a couple of speakers, and I'm talking to a couple of more who can give us some really global views on some leading edge things that are being done with AI in financial advice around the world. If you're not already signed up for that conference, I would urge you to do. Someone's going to, from my team, is going to put a link in the chat any moment now so that you can go and register if you're not already coming. It's going to be a great event. It's absolutely going to change the way a lot of people think about the future of financial advice. But at that point, I'm just going to take a 5 minute break. Look forward to seeing you back here at 1:05. And by the way, do try and stay on to the end of the session, please, at 1:30, because the last thing I'm going to do is show you what I think is probably the best kept secret in advisor technology at the moment, and where advisors can get access to a huge amount of information on all the an analysis on all the different systems that are available to you. But I'm going to do that at the end of the session. Have a good break, folks. I'll see you back here shortly. I think it's that time to bring everybody back in. Jane, while you're on my screen, I'm going to actually take the opportunity to ask you a little bit more about your early adopter experiences and, you know, what you're seeing from the WealthLink platform. And you've mentioned pricing. Do you want to expand on that?
Okay, so we're in the middle of UAT, so it's not going to actually go live for a little while, and me and a few of my team will be the first adopters of it. We'll be because we, as you'll see in the chat, we're actually a believer that you stick your own money there first and find out how it works, and then you can start to move your clients in once you know it's going to be all right. And it is amazing what you get sent by platforms and things like that, which you don't realize they're sending unless you're a client as well. So we always find that quite useful. So we'll start UAT next week on it. We've done a lot of training on it. We can see how it works. It's very straightforward, very simple. It's like I even said, don't bother training us anymore. We'll just start using it. And it was that simple. We'll just do it. It's not that hard. Press these buttons and off you toddle. We'll work it out. And we'll come back and ask you for more training if it turns out to be harder than we think. So we're in that process. The charging is, it starts at 0.15 and it goes down quite quickly as the fund value gets higher. The cost of transactions is quite low. I've got them all somewhere, but I can't just reel them off the top of my head, sorry. But put it this way, I think it's one of the cheapest platforms I've seen, which is helpful if you're planning to move people on. But the big cost saver for us will just be the time we normally spend moving things around. We use IO as our system of record. It's where we share everything with a client. It's the portal. We literally never talk to a client any other way. Apart from the occasional person that likes me to do it on Facebook Messenger, but in the main, it's always on the portal, and it's just going to stop all of that bit of work. And it's that bit of work that really annoys me. Like, I've got to move something back onto IO and share it with a client. I don't have to do that with WealthLink, and assuming it works as it on the box, it's got to be worth looking at. I am an early adopter of things because I love tech. I don't like working hard. I don't charge enough to work hard for my team to do more than we're doing. That's the model we've got, is to be technology remote and charge a good amount of money, but so the client still gets that outcome that's just the same. The difference is I don't send out grocery brochures, I don't take them out to lunch, I don't go sit on the motorway to go and meet them, I don't do any of this. So all the cost savings comes from the tech. And so we'll always be an early adopter, as we are with AI. That's another subject. But we'll be on there on the 10th to find out everything that's coming new. And we'll have to have another one very soon, Ian, because it will change in 6 months' time. So I don't know if that helps, but it just looks like it's going to be slick. It's going to save me lots of money and lots of time. And I love stuff like that.
Sam is on this call somewhere, and you've probably just given her a heart attack by suggesting that we should have two AI conferences a year as well as our main conference. I'm going to be in trouble by the time I get off this call. We did talk quite a lot there about independence and open architecture, but Sinead, do you mind if I come back to you? Because when we were talking in the prep call for this, you were saying you were seeing actually a lot of benefits in the restricted model with GIA and ISAs, and particularly the efficiencies with integrated pension plans. So could I ask you to expand on that a bit? And then I'm going to come to James Gillespie. Sorry, Sinead, yeah. Apologies.
It's back to that thing. For me, when an advisor's looking at a file and they've all these different solutions, it just takes so much longer to do. And I'm of the theory 99.9% of good investment returns comes from the asset allocation, the old modern portfolio theory. And if you strip it back to that, having less things to think about. Now, we do have a panel. We're restricted, and the panel's probably too large, but technically ISA and GIAs go to Fusion. The advisors know what they're doing. The clients can top up direct on the wealth platform. I'm not doing a top-up report. All the clients are put on the wealth platform. Clients can bring their laptops onto the meeting and top up. It's just so easy to do. Advisors know exactly what they're doing. And that really works for us, because I don't see, you know, it's working for what do you want the client experience to look like and what's important to the client. And from all my years as an advisor and a para planner, the only thing the client wants to know is what have I give you and what is it worth? They want to know the return. And if you have a system that can give them a visual graph that gives them their money and time weighted return, everything else is just irrelevant. You might pull off all these fund fact sheets and stick them up, but the client sees no value in them whatsoever. So I don't want to be spending all the time doing that, or the advisors that I manage doing it, when it's not given any value. So that's the reason why. And back to that, going into a restaurant, it's all about using the ingredients you have to cook a really good meal. And if it's good, keep making that meal. And it's back to this. And if someone comes in and they need something else, you can go off panel. They're not shoehorned into it. That's really what works for us. It mightn't work for everybody. And back, there's no perfect platform. There's advantages and disadvantages to them all. And I know, because I've used pretty much all of them, Transact, Qualter, Parmenion, for my years being a para planner. And there is no perfect platform. There'll always be something you want it to do. So you have to focus on what type of experience you want your client, what type of client, and what way you want to manage your business and your advisors to focus on that planning. Because there will be so much frustration around it if they have too many things to look at and too many choices. That's just the way I feel about it. And I think everybody's restricted in reality anyway, if we're all pretty honest with ourselves. As long as you can explain it to a client, it's a bad word. But everybody has centralized investment propositions. Nobody is researching the whole, is truly independent. So I don't feel it matters.
Okay. Some powerful views there, for which I thank you. Very keen to facilitate the full debate. Let me come to James Gillespie, because James, you made some very valid points about the level of information that platforms should be sharing. Can I ask you to expand on that? I'm after that going to come to Anthony Carty.
Yeah, it's a drum that I keep on banging on about, but what's in your back office should mirror what's on the platform. They've got the data. A lot of our job is to make sure that what we're saying the client is invested in, the fee they're meant to be paying, is what's on the platform, and having that double check, effectively, to make sure that the two mirror. And so you need to be able to extract that information from the platform and make sure that it's true to what you record in your back office system. I don't see a lot of discussion around this area, but that's key to making sure we're doing what the client is looking for. And again, a lot of what Sinead just talked about, that is investment strategy and stuff like that. You need to make sure that you are, that the platform has the investment strategy correct. That annual rate of return figure is what the client needs to know. And without having all the detail in your back office system, you cannot report on true annual returns.
Yeah, I'm going to try and quickly bring some research up that comes up to that point in a moment, James, but thank you very much for that. Let me move to Anthony.
It's just a quick one. I did touch very briefly on it, but this restricted independent thing is, you would expect maybe myself and Sinead to say, really, is there that much difference? Since RDR, I think we've had one client actually who's asked the question around, you're restricted, why aren't you independent? And we had to attend to it. But if I'm being honest, I think it's something the regulator needs to look at. Because, you know, that we all understand why the definitions of independent and restricted came out in 2012-13. So it's perfectly sensible, but time's moved on. If you think of everything Jane just said a few moments ago, eminently sensible, you're going to partner with an integrated system that's going to make your life very simple, very straightforward. You can get on and do the stuff which you're really good at, which is giving great financial advice to clients. But that necessarily means that you're going to be using one platform, i.e. in this example, SS&C Hubwise. And so I think this sort of furious debate around independent versus restricted has got to move on a bit, and the regulator really has got to do its part in that. And there's a whole world of difference between what Benchmark and Fusion are doing and what we're doing, and dare I say what SJP are doing, or to a certain extent a few M&G or whatever the case may be. So I don't know, I'm hopeful the regulators, and also, by the way, we're all subject to COBS, we're all subject to Consumer Duty, we're all subject to the where you've got to have consistent client outcomes. And I just find this whole debate around restricted independent pretty dull, boring and unnecessary, and I can really hope the regulator gets to grips with it at some point.
There's a very good feature written by Amanda Newman-Smith in Money Marketing this month, if you haven't seen it already. And Tom, the editor, added some good editorial as well on that. The one point I would make when we're trying to assess independence, there almost seems to be, if for advisors to be genuinely independent, you would need every product provider, platform, put on what label you like, to offer equivalence in their technology service. And we are just so far away from that, especially in a world where you have conversations about legacy systems. But let's be honest, some of the things about we can't do that for legacy systems have been going on for 20 years. Let's face it, much of the platform community, when it originally came out, was loudly saying that they were going to be more efficient than life offices because the life offices had legacy systems. An awful lot of the platform community now seem to be into a legacy system environment. Anyway, just move on. Perhaps I can bring Richard Gough back in to talk a bit more about your point on annual returns and performance.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me about clients who keep going on about annual returns. I say, at the moment in Client Bank, we only have one who asks us. And that's more because he likes spreadsheets nearly as much as I do. So I think that's why, rather than anything else. Perhaps it's because we focus so much on the planning. So, well, we have a target return for your planning objectives, dividend, as long as we're meeting that and we're reviewing it, I don't know. So I find that clients don't need that sort of information, and it's monitored elsewhere. Maybe that's sort of us. I'm not quite sure, Sinead. I understand the sort of the independent versus restricted and provider choice. I'm not completely convinced that just because you've got a centralized investment proposition means that you're not truly independent, because assuming you start building those portfolios and really then you're agnostic as to where you put the money, I suspect if you are solely, we only buy index tracking, and I'm not going to get into that argument because I'll get into restricted active versus passive and explain why the argument's wrong if you want me to. If you're starting with a whole horizon and then and those are my recommended UK equity funds and my global equity funds and my bond funds for my asset allocation strategy to meet your risk profile and blah, 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 then I think that makes you independent, even though, and so on. If you never review them, then perhaps it's not, I don't know, but that's a separate issue. But I think there's a lot of functionality that's been talked about, oh, we can get this and we get some bits and pieces and it feeds into the back office. And I'm not convinced that's a good enough reason to not use a provider. Just to say, oh, it doesn't integrate, it doesn't send us transaction histories to our back office. Who cares? If you need a transaction history, you can get it off the platform.
Jane, did you want to come in on that one?
Yeah, you're having a rant at me. I've said that nicely.
No, I was just saying no chance in hell. There is always a platform and a provider out there that just does just as good a product and will feed into your back office system. But, you know, years ago, I think that was right, Richard, because there were so few that could actually manage it. You couldn't really ignore the ones that didn't do it. Now, I absolutely believe you could ignore the ones that don't do it, because there is always one of them that can do exactly the same thing that you need, but they will do it.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So I'm not going to disagree with you, Jane. I'm sure you're right. But can I ask then, with regards to ongoing suitability, and for those things that are legacy and that have no technology and valuations are manual, okay, let's say, and there still are, but they still offer things that you can't justify. You can't just move them just because they're rubbish. And then how do you get around the issue of a bond wrapper where your platform provider either gets bought or starts doing horrendous administration, sort of, you're stuck with it. So you can't do anything about it. So what do you do? Unless you sort of say, oh, I need to surrender it. And then there's tax consequences and stuff. So I'm not sure that there's some of this stuff that we worry about consumer duties that is actually relevant in the real world. But that's
I'm going to take us another direction, and I'm going to actually talk a little bit more about, and this is a teaser, and perhaps it's, you know, think about some of the stuff that we are going to be addressing on the 10th of July. What's the role for looking at beginning to understand clients' learning styles, understanding the way in which people assimilate information? Because this is certainly where I'm seeing a lot of progress being made elsewhere in the world. Maybe this is too much getting into one of our future sessions, talking about the future of advice. And I suppose my question there is, anyone seeing platforms doing particularly innovative things about helping customers serve people in different ways? Who's particularly, is anyone particularly good at looking at customer vulnerability, which is such a broad subject? And anybody care to share some views on any of the aforementioned? Yeah, okay, I'll take silence as my indication to move.
I'll happily.
Yeah, go on.
We say that as our responsibility, and rather than a function of the platform. So we think about that in more in terms of our client portal, our onboarding process, and the way in which clients want to engage with us. I think it's presumptuous. Different people want to be dealt with in different ways at different times. And it's presumptuous to have a sort of one size fits all engagement process. So we don't really think about that in terms of platforms. We think about it more in terms of us being as the advisor firm, being the, if you like, interface between the client and whatever vulnerabilities they may have. And then in the background, the assets that they have under management. I hope that's not a load of waffle and you get my point.
I just realised that I said earlier I'd share some data that we've got about advisor attitudes to harvesting data, and particularly the trend towards data lakes. What I want to point out to you is the question along the bottom and on the right-hand side that's showing that something in excess of 50% of advisors are now looking to move to an environment where they can have a data lake with more information. And I think that should be a clear indication to perhaps to the platform community of what they need to be doing. So that's that one. Now allow me then to swap over. No, that's the wrong deck. I beg your pardon. That's the one I want. So we've already talked about AIFA. I said I would give you information on what might be the best kept secret in the industry about advice technology, which is that actually there is a website, and I had it here in the first place and I've moved away from it, called advisorsoftware.com. We run it, and up there you will find information on well over 150 different advice technology systems. There is a team of people. I'm going to do a shout out to Darren Madden, Martin McKenna, and Jesse Leeworthy, who all work incredibly hard to maintain this for you. You don't just see, and actually I'll go to the ecosystem diagrams, because there are a few ecosystem diagrams doing the rounds, but what people maybe don't realise with the ones that we distribute is you can actually drill down in them, and you can go in and decide to look at what different organisations are offering. It then takes you down into the level of functionality that's available,